Picture this. You are seeing Fernando, a 65-year-old man who comes in for a pre-operative examination before knee replacement surgery. Fernando has no concerns to report except his chronic joint pain. His heart rate is 75 beats per minute and blood pressure 126 over 82 millimeters of mercury. "I can't wait to have this surgery to get some pain relief," he says, "but my surgeon says I need an ECG before she'll do the surgery." You order his ECG and review it with him in the office. How do you calculate his heart rate from the ECG? What other information can you gather from this 100-year-old technology that is still in clinical use every day? Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Explain how normal ECG waves, intervals, and segments work. 2. Explain how to determine heart rate from an ECG tracing. And 3. Develop a systematic approach to ECG interpretation. Part 1. What is an electrocardiogram? Despite the many technological advances in cardiac monitoring during the past 100 years, the electrocardiogram, or ECG, remains the cornerstone technique for detecting and monitoring conditions such as myocardial infarction, arrhythmias, pericarditis, and drug effects on the myocardium. Once you understand how the ECG works, you can begin to develop a systematic approach to interpreting it. In this part 2 of the ECG discussion, we will focus on interpreting ECG waveforms and segments and how they fit into the cardiac cycle. We'll end with some basic techniques for ECG interpretation that will guide you when you start encountering abnormal ECGs. Part 2. What are ECG waves, intervals, and segments? The normal ECG tracing consists of a series of waveforms marked by points named in alphabetical order, but not starting at the beginning of the alphabet. Nope, we start with P for whatever reason and end with T. ECGs are obtained by placing a series of electrodes on the patient's chest and limbs and measuring the electrical vector moving in the direction of the electrode, which is also called a lead. An upright or upward-pointing wave means that the wave of depolarization is moving toward that lead. For most of our discussion, we will be picturing lead 2 to examine the waveforms, because this lead corresponds best to the main vector or direction of depolarization in the heart. Let's start with the waves. Waves P through T correspond to the electrical activity of the heart. Waves are upward or downward deflections from the baseline, 0 millivolts, of the ECG tracing. This baseline represents the isoelectric, meaning the same or neutral electricity. First up, the P wave represents atrial depolarization. The duration of the P wave is usually less than 120 milliseconds, or 3 small boxes on the ECG. So, if the P wave represents atrial depolarization, where is the wave for atrial repolarization? Well, it's there, but it's very small and hidden inside the QRS complex. The QRS complex corresponds to ventricular depolarization. See figure 2 if you can on your podcast app. It's much bigger than the P wave, reflecting the much greater mass of myocytes and therefore volume of electrical signals in the ventricles compared to the atria. The normal duration of the QRS complex is less than 100 milliseconds, which corresponds to 2.5 small boxes on the ECG paper. You may notice that I called it the QRS complex, not the QRS wave. That's because it's usually made up of 1 to 3 separate waves, depending on which lead you're looking at and the particular conduction pattern of the patient. In general, ventricular depolarization can occur in 3 phases which correspond to these waves. The Q wave represents the initial depolarization of the interventricular septum. In lead 2, this is a downward or negative deflection because it's moving rightward away from the direction that lead 2 points. The R wave represents the depolarization of the ventricular mass. The main vector is to the left and inferiorly, moving directly toward lead 2, which is why the deflection is upward or positive in lead 2. The R wave is large and dominates the QRS complex because the bulk of the myocardium is being depolarized, so the electrical signal is large. And finally, the S wave represents depolarization of the posterior surface of the heart. This wave travels rightward, away from lead 2, and therefore it's negative or downward in lead 2. The ECG waves and direction of deflection can vary considerably based on the lead and individual patient differences. Time for a quick clinical correlation. Enlarged, quote, pathologic Q waves can signify underlying scar tissue that occurs after a myocardial infarction. An enlarged R wave often signifies ventricular hypertrophy, which happens when the myocytes enlarge in response to hypertension or valvular disease, for example. Bigger myocytes mean stronger electrical signals and larger ECG waves. Next up, the T wave corresponds to ventricular repolarization. It is typically positive or upright in lead 2. Okay, so we covered the waves, but now it gets trickier as we talk about segments and intervals. These may seem arbitrary as to why one is an interval and another is a segment, but listen closely to the definitions. On the ECG tracing, by definition, a segment is a flat isoelectric region between two waves. In contrast, an interval is a duration of the tracing that includes both a segment and at least one wave. So we start with the PR segment. The PR segment is measured from the end of the P wave to the beginning of the QRS complex. It represents the time that it takes for the AV node to depolarize. Remember, the electrical impulse does not go directly to the ventricles, but instead travels from the atria through the atrioventricular node, a specialized structure that slows down the impulse, accounting for the length of the PR segment. The PR interval includes the P wave plus the PR segment. See? A wave plus a segment. It starts at the beginning of atrial depolarization and continues until the beginning of ventricular depolarization. The PR interval is typically 120 to 200 milliseconds, but may increase or decrease with changes in heart rate. This is due to sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system action on the AV node. The sympathetic system speeds conduction and shortens the PR interval, whereas the parasympathetic system slows conduction and lengthens the PR interval. Note that compared to the lengthy PR interval, the actual depolarization of the ventricle, or the QRS, happens quickly. Of clinical importance, the PR interval is an indicator of the speed of conduction through the AV node. First degree and second degree, both Mobitz 1 and 2, heart block, cause a prolonged PR interval because conduction through the AV node is delayed. Third degree heart block occurs when there is no conduction through the AV node, causing the atria and ventricles to contract independently of each other. In third degree heart block, the P waves and the QRS complexes would have no fixed association. Now for the ST segment. The ST segment is measured from the end of the QRS complex to the beginning of the T wave. It corresponds to the plateau phase of the fast response cardiac action potential. It's usually isoelectric with a slight upward concavity, like a shallow bowl. Other ST segment morphologies, or shapes, may represent myocardial ischemia, myocardial infarction, or pericarditis. The QT interval is measured from the start of the QRS complex to the end of the T wave, so this interval also contains the ST segment. The QT interval defines the period of time that includes both ventricular depolarization and repolarization. The QT interval is most clinically useful in measuring the rate of ventricular repolarization. Now, interpreting the QT interval is tricky because its duration changes depending on heart rate, meaning that the normal QT interval reference values differ based on heart rate. The faster someone's heart rate is, the more compressed their ECG waveforms or intervals are going to be because more cardiac cycles are fitting into the same time span. So the normal QT interval for a heart rate of 60 beats per minute is going to be longer than the normal QT interval for a heart rate of 120. This means that the QT interval must be adjusted or normalized before any meaningful interpretation can be made. The new value is called the corrected QT interval, which we call QTC, which equals the QT interval divided by the square root of the RR interval. Normal values for the QTC are less than 440 milliseconds in men and less than 460 milliseconds in women. A prolonged QT interval can lead to dangerous arrhythmias, such as torsade de pointe, characterized by irregular waveforms of alternating amplitudes resembling twisting around a point. This looks sort of like a twisting party streamer, but this party can lead to death if not treated immediately. Ready for another clinical correlation? Some drugs have the side effect of prolonging the QT interval. Methadone, a pain medication, erythromycin, an antibiotic, and haloperidol, an antipsychotic, are just a few of the medications that have this side effect. Before these are prescribed, the QT interval should be checked, and the drug should be prescribed with caution. Question time! What is the danger of a prolonged QT interval? A prolonged QT interval can lead to dangerous arrhythmias, such as torsade. Part 3. How do ECGs relate to the cardiac cycle? Now that we've defined and explained our waves and segments, let's go back through them again and correlate each one with a mechanical event in the cardiac cycle. You may have heard the fancy term electromechanical coupling. Well, that just means that the electrical events correspond to mechanical events in the normally functioning heart. Atrial systole, or contraction, starts just after the start of the P wave. The slight delay between electricity and contraction is expected. The physical act of muscle contraction must await depolarization, calcium entry into myocytes, subsequent calcium release from the sarcoplasmic reticulum, then binding and activation of the actin and myosin filaments. Atrial systole does not end until the QRS complex is underway. If the atrial repolarization wave were visible, it would occur just at the start of atrial diastole, in the middle of the QRS complex. Let's see if you got that. At what point on an ECG is atrial systole expected to start and stop? Atrial systole starts just after the start of the P wave and ends in the middle of the QRS complex. For the ventricle, systole begins at about the peak of the R wave and continues all the way through the end of the T wave, which represents the ventricular repolarization. So for both the atrium and the ventricle, the muscle is still contracting even as the electrical repolarization starts, pointing out the delay between these electrical mechanical events. Part 4. How do we interpret ECGs? Now that we've covered the ECG waveforms, intervals, and segments, we have all the necessary tools to analyze an ECG. First, we calculate the heart rate. We can calculate a patient's heart rate directly from the ECG, but this does not entirely replace feeling and measuring their pulse. That's because in some diseases, patients show an electrical impulse on the ECG, but no actual cardiac muscle contraction and therefore no pulse, a condition called electromechanical dissociation. But usually, the ECG can be used to calculate the heart rate, and this can be done in several ways. Technique number one. This is the most technical, but also the most tedious, way to calculate heart rate. I'm going to tell you how to do it, but in reality, the other methods are quicker and more commonly used. So, first, count the number of small ECG boxes that are covered from the beginning of a P wave to the beginning of the next P wave, representing one complete heartbeat or cycle. Multiply this number of small boxes by 0.04 seconds, because each small box is 0.04 seconds. And that tells you the duration of time for one cardiac cycle. To find out the patient's heart rate or beats per minute, simply divide 60 seconds by the calculated time value. Let's try an example. Let's say one beat from P wave to P wave spans 20 small boxes. Each small box represents 0.04 seconds, meaning the entire cardiac cycle lasted 0.04 times 20 equals 0.8 seconds. To calculate the heart rate, divide 60 seconds by 0.8 seconds per beat, and you should arrive at a rate of 75 beats per minute. Technique number two. Here is a much easier shortcut. You should memorize this series of numbers: 300, 150, 100, 75, 60, and 50. I'll do it again. 300, 150, 100, 75, 60, and 50. These represent the heart rates of one entire cardiac cycle spanning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 large boxes on the ECG paper. You can also calculate it rather than memorizing by dividing 300 by the number of large boxes. So let's say a P2P interval spans 4 large boxes. You can either divide 300 by 4 or simply count backwards: 300, 150, 100, 75. Either way, you should get a heart rate of 75 beats per minute. If the P-to-P interval, or you can also use the R-to-R interval, which is sometimes easier to see. If this spanned three large boxes, the heart rate would be around 100 beats per minute. Two large boxes would be 150, and so on. Quiz time! What is the heart rate if one P-to-P interval spans five large boxes on an ECG? Answer is 60 beats per minute. Remember, 300, 150, 175, and 60. That's five steps backwards. Technique number three. This one is the easiest of the three and works when you have a 12-lead ECG. Since a full-page ECG tracing is 10 seconds long, simply count the number of beats on the rhythm strip that runs across the bottom of the ECG page and multiply that number by 6. If a page shows 13 beats, the rate is 13 times 6, which is 78 beats per minute. Makes sense. So now that we've calculated the important heart rate, we can develop a systematic approach to interpreting the rest of the ECG. Being systematic is an important part of ensuring that we do not miss a critical finding. By reviewing ECGs the same way every time, we build confidence and increase the speed and accuracy of interpretation. While going through this interpretation scheme, we'll also briefly discuss some cardiac diseases to introduce you to how an ECG can help in diagnosis. Here are the questions you ask as you systematically analyze rate, rhythm, intervals and segments, waveforms, and finally integrate the data. Step 1, rate. Is the rate between 60 to 100 beats per minute? A heart rate less than 60 per minute represents bradycardia, whereas a heart rate greater than 100 beats per minute represents tachycardia. Step 2, rhythm. Are the QRS complexes occurring regularly or irregularly? Does a P wave occur before every QRS and a QRS after every P? An absent P wave with an irregular rhythm may be seen with atrial fibrillation. Step 3, intervals and segments. Here we are talking about duration or the time for each of these. Are the PR interval, the QRS complex, and the QT interval within normal time limits? Progressive lengthening or fixed lengthening of the PR interval may be noted with various degrees of heart block. QRS complex widening may be noted in left or right bundle branch blocks or ventricular pre-excitation conditions like Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome. QT interval may be shortened in hypercalcemia or genetic conditions, and QT interval, on the other hand, may be lengthened with drugs, hypokalemia, or certain genetic conditions. Step 4, waveforms. Here, we're referring to the shape or the appearance of waveforms. Examine the P wave and the ST segment. Are the shapes the same from one cardiac cycle to the next? Is there any elevation or depression of the ST segment? ST segment elevation may be due to myocardial infarction. Peaked T waves may indicate hyperkalemia. And finally, step 5, integrate and interpret. Once you've assessed the ECG with steps 1 through 4, look for an overall diagnosis. And that's it for normal ECG. Let's check your knowledge and see what we've learned today. First, can you describe what electrical events are represented by the P wave, QRS complex, and T wave? The P wave represents atrial depolarization. The QRS complex represents ventricular depolarization and can have 1 to 3 parts. And the T wave represents ventricular repolarization. Next, what events are represented by the PR interval and the QT interval? The PR interval represents the passage of the current from the SA node through the AV node to the ventricles. The QT interval represents the rate of ventricular repolarization. How do you calculate the heart rate from an ECG? There are several ways to calculate heart rate, but the easiest is to count the number of QRS complexes in a 10-second rhythm strip on the 12-lead ECG, the entire page, and multiply by 6. And lastly, what is the systematic order for interpreting ECGs the same way every time? A sequence for interpreting ECGs is rate calculation, rhythm analysis, evaluation of intervals and segments, waveform analysis, and then integrated interpretation, or, said in shorthand, rate, rhythm, interval segment, waveforms, and integration. And we're done. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to your patient from the beginning of this episode. Remember, Fernando is seeing you for a pre-op ECG. How do you calculate his heart rate? What other information can you decipher from his ECG? You systematically review Fernando's ECG, determining heart rate, rhythm, intervals, and searching for evidence of prior heart damage. His RR interval spans four large boxes on the tracing, indicating a rate of 300, 150, 175 beats per minute, exactly what you found on physical examination. You explain to Fernando that the ECG has not shown any abnormalities and how this is helpful in assessing the level of risk posed by general anesthesia and major surgery. It can also provide a useful baseline for later comparison if there's any concern about future heart trouble. You send a note to the surgeon letting her know that Fernando's ECG is stone cold normal and you have no hesitation for him proceeding with knee replacement. And that's our show. If you liked this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.